It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's the moment you've all been waiting for. Another hour with Sean McConville. Welcome to Raw Milk Meats. Let's have it! Stanley fans, and welcome back to Raw Milk Meats for part two of my conversation with Sean McConville. In this episode, we talk playoffs, promotion, and what the future holds for the King of Needle, who has given us some of the best fan reactions, like this one against Bolton.
Oh my days! Darren Murphy with a proper good chance there.
Standing next to him, he's not marking him.
He's completely open here. Deflection, it's in. He shushed our fans as well.
Goal for Atkinson Stanley! Scored by number 11, Sean McConville!
3-1.
Stupid.
And I've got to say, Atkinson Stanley, their players have no respect. Shushing our fans, sliding in front of them for both goals. Like, just no respect whatsoever. It's not the same when you're a man down, and it's clearly affected us.
And this one against Blackpool. Here's part two. Enjoy.
Okay, then. So you've just mentioned there, obviously, you love the you love everything about the club, the people around the club. It's on good footing now. And, you know, I'll take it as that's why you probably play your best football in there. We've seen it with a lot of players, really, that have played the best football at Stanley over the years. A lot of players that have left maybe haven't done as well as they have done with Aki. Is that just a case of being around John and Jimmy as well, just buying into what they're doing?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, as a you know, to be honest, I had a good year at Chester. I enjoyed my time at Chester. I've got to say, the fans there were spot on. He only had a year there, but you know, it was a really good club, and the manager at the time, Steve Bear, sort of got the best out of me there as well. Not as much as what Jimmy and John done. Listen, with them too, you know, the good cop, bad cop. You know, they don't get the credit they deserve sometimes. They really don't, honestly. Like you see, when jobs go up in our league and the league above, you know, for the job that the gaffer's done, he should be getting easily a championship job. You know, he's took a team that have lowest budgets in League Two to League One, competing with Sunderland's Portsmouth. Not only competing with them, but has built a team that are probably better than their team on paper, which for the funds that he's got is absolutely unbelievable. So you imagine going into, imagine the gaffer going into, as I say, a Sunderland and getting a wage budget that they can pay, you know, paying, you know, Will Griggs 12 grand a week and players like that. You know, imagine John, the gaffer, and Jimmy going in there with tools, with a training ground, with players being able to get breakfast before training, dinner after training, telling the chef what you want the day before you go into training. Training on grass, not only grass, a carpet. You know, you've got your sessions planned. You know, the three of them are working hand to mouth still now that we're in League One.
Yeah.
You know, your dad will tell you we've got to train on the pitch sometimes, and he hates it. And I have a joke with him because sometimes early on the season we ruin the pitch for November, December because that's the only grass pitch we can train on, and that's what they've got to deal with. No other club in our league will have to do that. You know, we're still training on plastic. You know, since 2015, from when I first come back, you know, from being on the handbend, which is no good for your body. You know, it's partly the reason why I done my Achilles, to be honest, is training on the plastic. Well, it most definitely is. It just drains your body. So these, and I know the gaffer hates the plastic. He can't stand it. Jimmy Bell loves it. I don't. Well, he says he loves it, but I'm not quite sure. I don't know. I can't tell whether he's joking or not sometimes.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think we are? What's the crack of the training ground? I haven't heard anything about that in a while. Is there just?
I don't know. Maybe we've got the obviously the new setup where the hub is. I think that they're investing in a couple of pitches that are there. Right. They're gonna have them ready for next year, apparently. But you know, I've been a lackey for a long time now, and the amount of times I've heard, oh, they'll be ready for next year.
Yeah, it's
one of them. You've got to take it with a pinch of salt until you actually see it happening. You never know, but you know, for what they've got to deal with, as I say, with. So we go in of a morning, we don't have breakfast. There's no really place where you can, you know, even sit with your teammates and get a coffee type thing. You train, you know, you do a little, there's a little, our gym's a porter cabin, which you've seen, you know, so it's tiny. You can all go and have a stretch in there. You can't get that many people in there now because of COVID. And then you drive down to the hub and you're training on plastic. You're back in your car and you're up the road. So if you think about what if they had a proper club, proper club isn't the right word. A club where they have the financial backing to have things in place that we don't. I think I'm more than confident the gaffer and Jimmy and John could take a club out the championship if they had all them tools. But you know, it's fascinating for me that they don't get linked with them jobs.
Why do you think they do get overlooked? Why do you think that is? Because you see, like you say, people like the Cowleys. Cowleys did it for a much less amount of time, didn't they, at Lincoln? They got a chance. People like Cluffy's even gone up, hasn't he, and had to do with the championship.
It's staggering. The only thing I could think of is that when people probably look at the gaffer and Jimmy, they probably equate them to old school. These are old school. They'll get the best out of players, man management, you know, they'll drive you on. Where teams now look tactically wise, but they underestimate them because honest to God, you should see some of the sessions that Jimmy puts on, that the gaffer puts on, that John Doolan can put on, Jeb Brannan can put on. Tactically, they have to be better than other teams in this league because they don't have the resources. So I think they get underestimated for how good they are tactically and the sessions and the shape of play, the phases of play that they do. People don't look into that. If you ask any other opposing fan or chairman, what's your view on John Coleman? He'd probably say, good man, manager. Gets the best out of his players. He won't say, great on the training pitch. He's got a great assistant. The sessions are unbelievable. And that for me is probably what stops him going to that next level. And it's just that tag of him being a great man manager and people not realising there's a lot more to him than that. And certainly a lot more to Jimmy. You know, as I say, I've seen Jimmy come on as a coach leaps and bounds. You know, I have plenty of arguments with Jimmy on a daily basis, and I have done throughout my career, but you know, I've watched them become a fella who can recognise in games what needs to change at half time in games, you know, day before games when he recognises something on a video and you see it occurring in the game, you think he's spot on there.
Yeah.
And as I say, they both don't get enough credit for that. And I think, as I say, that probably little thing would stop them being linked with these jobs. But if I was a chairman of a championship club, having trained and worked under them, and certainly players this season and players in the past who've worked under the gaffer and Jimmy, would say, listen, there's more to them than just being a good man manager.
Yeah. I'm just conscious of time. I'm just thinking. Right, we'll get on with...
It's okay. Go on.
It's all right, mate.
What time is it?
It's 1 o'clock.
Time, go on.
Yeah.
Loads of time, go on.
We'll talk about... Move on to sort of general stuff then. So, like,
yeah,
biggest characters that you've played with then at Stanley, you think?
Played against or with?
Played with at Aki, yeah.
Played with. So, at the start, it'd be your Ian Dunbavins and your Craneys. You know, they were absolute loon balls. You know, more recently, you think of your Paddy Lacy's, your Adam Buxton's, your Terry Gornell's, your Anthony Barry's. You know, there's a great story on Paddy Lacy. We played Portsmouth. So obviously Paddy was at he was a carpet fitter. He's a good carpet fitter.
Yeah.
Very good carpet fitter. So we played Portsmouth and they had Michael Doyle in centre mid. Now Michael Doyle is one of the horriblest players I've ever played against. Horrible, horrible. And you shake your hand after the game. I actually seen him in the airport flying somewhere. They come up with his missus and have a chat with him. Great off the pitch, but on the pitch, mate, he was horrible.
Yeah.
He'd pinch you, great in the tackle, hard as nails. And I mean hard as nails. Old school. He'd tell you your girlfriend's a slut. He'd tell you, you know, your mum. He'd do anything to put you off your game. Or if he didn't put you off your game, you do something where you do something silly and you get sent off, or you do something to the stage where you go in your own skin and you wouldn't want the ball. He was just very good at it. Honestly, one of the biggest wind-up, like, horrible players I've played against, but good. You know, I respect that. You know, he can back it up in a tackle, good on the ball as well. So we played Portsmouth, and the gaffer just moved up to Birkdale. He lives up that way now. So he said to Paddy in the week building up to the Portsmouth game, will you do my carpets after training, you know? So Paddy was like, yeah, so I'll do the carpets. And so I think it was Seamus Keneally and Scotty Brown were meant to start on a Saturday. And I think Scotty pulled out in the warm-up. So Paddy had been doing the gaffer's carpets all week. Got to the Saturday. I think Scotty had done his carpet or something. So he's named the team and everyone's shocked that he's put Paddy in. So he didn't see it coming, you know what I mean? And Adam Buxton, who was at Portsmouth at the time, he spoke to us on Paddy. He knew that he'd been doing the gaffer's carpets. So we'd only told Michael Doyle, fucking hell, Paddy Lacy's been doing the gaffer's carpets all week in his house. So fucking this Michael Doyle, first 3 minutes in the game, you shit. You're only playing because you've fucking been in the gaffer's doing his carpets all week, you dickhead. Straight away, honest to God, on him all. Like I'm trying to calm Paddy now because Paddy can handle himself. He boxes done. He's an hard lad, and I'm thinking he's just going to punch his head in here in this game and get sent off. So So this Michael Doyle's giving it to him. You shit. You shouldn't be on the same pitch as me. How are you playing football on this pitch? You are terrible. Just giving it to Paddy. And Paddy's just sucking it up, taking it. So it was the game where Paddy scored that worldie.
Yeah.
Caught him throw him. Gets one out of his feet, whips it into the top bin. As he's walking back to the halfway line, he says to Michael Doyle, not bad for a carpet fitter. Yeah. And Michael Doyle just said, you know what, fair play, mate, fair play.
Absolutely class. What a goal that was.
As I say, oh, what a goal, mate. But he was a character. There's been that many, Araki. There's been loads, you know. You think of even some of the left wing ones, like the Sean Nessies. He was a character, you know. Bavo was a big one. Craney, that Ray Potter, he was an absolute lunatic, mate. You would have loved to have met him. He was an absolute oddball, but he was funny. You know, it's part and parcel. You just see him like it become a caring theme where Araki just bring these characters in. You know, if you're the wrong, it was like if you're the wrong and you'll end up with Araki.
Yeah.
Type of thing. You know what I mean?
Reputation. We've had that for many, it.
We've had that many down the years. But I think it's because the gaffer can manage them. You know, Andy Mangan, he's another one, massive character. We've had loads of them, and that's I think getting them characters in has contributed to our success on the pitch, mate, definitely.
Decent, mate, yeah. Like you say, Andy Mangan as well last year. He's someone mentioned before, two spells as well, decent. You mentioned there then, so Michael Doyle, what about characters you've played against then?
Well, he's up there with one of the hardest players I played against, because he could dish it out, mate. He'd give you the, and he could back it up with the tackle. Well, he's a little, he's only 5'5". Eight, but a little Irish, hard Irishman, and you know, you get your players that can give it. Like, you know, you think of like your Danny Hiltons of the world, where you know he just wind fans up. You know, he won't really speak to you on the pitch as a player. So we had that season, which, you know, when we won the league, and I think it became a bit of a joke when he tweeted "Mind the Gap."
Yeah,
he tweeted in the. I think it was the. He tweeted in maybe the. The November choo-choo mind the gap. I think they went like 8-12 points clear, maybe, or something like that. So another funny story. We obviously going to Luton and playing that game, winning. You know, me, Mark Hughes, and Billy got in the team of the year. So we're down at the PFA Awards. Luton are on the next table. Danny Hilton, Alan Sheehan, Dan Potts, James Justin, all them lads and those three. And our girlfriends are on another table. So every time it goes quiet, you just hear me, Mark Hughes, or Billy Keith shout, choo choo, and the gap. Honest to God. So they're looking like, I think Billy was made to cheer and he's laughing. But that Danny Hilton's like, you can see him spewing, like seething inside. And he's thinking, these cheeky cunts, these are winning them on the league. And I've tweeted that. And in the end, our birds were shouting at our girlfriends, they go, choo choo, mind the gap.
He's tweeted it before we were even involved. You just think, why even do that? What a dick. But again, a decent player, wasn't he, as well? A decent player who could back it up.
Top player. Yeah. Top player, because he they had the season. They played the shape that we're currently playing at the minute, the Diamond, didn't they? And they were effective with it. They had him and Collins up front.
Yeah.
They had Justin, who's flying for Leicester now. James Justin, and he was the right back. They had Potts or Stacey as the other full back. They had... Luke Berry and Panzu. They had a good team, and they had a manager in Nathan Jones, who, although I don't like him as a fella, you'd have to respect what he's done for them on the pitch, because he molds a good team and they play good football, mate.
You say you don't necessarily like him as a fella. What was the asked by people about that celebration that he did on that day and stuff like that? What was the basis behind that?
So he commented in the week building up to the game that Luton were the best side in the league. And even to this day, after we won the league, he still said that Luton were the best team in the league. And we won the league by 4 points, I think.
Yeah.
So he's brain dead. And you know when sometimes a manager speaks in the week and fans will think, just put that on our dressing room door and let the lads see it. It was sort of one of them building up to the game where everyone's thinking, this Nathan Jones is one cheeky so-and-so. You know, he's basically saying, they're the best team in the league and they're going to beat us. So I thought, you know, as I say, that fighting mentality then comes into me as a kid. That's ingrained in me. I'm thinking, I can't wait to give it to this cunt today. I hope I score because I'm going to fucking let him know when I do.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, the game, we got battered that game.
Yeah, I was thinking.
I don't know whether you were there. We got battered, mate, for 25 minutes. It was like the Alamo. They were having corner after corner. We were heading them out. Jimmy Dunn's cleared one off the line. Chappie's made a couple of good saves. You know, and then out of nowhere, the ball just goes to Caden. I think it'll be like, he sets me. I put one out of my feet and then just whip one into the far corner.
So you watch then, when you watch the highlights, even it's clear that we're getting absolutely battered as well. Even
you're battered, mate. We did
because I think before you score as well, you had another shot, didn't you? That goes into the crowd, and that's the only shot that it shows of us apart from the goals. But then obviously, so Christ, what
an end. So as I say, then going and then that iconic picture of me influencing Nathan Jones, which is a great photo, mate. You know.
Yes.
If he had his number, I probably would have sent him in after the game and said, have some of that. But I didn't, unfortunately, have his number. But it's one of them. Even the second half, we were still getting beat up a little bit and battered. And the funny story about the winning goal, when Jordan gets it on the right wing, you can hear John Doolan shout corner and you can see him pointing, corner, corner. So he's happy with the points. You know, the bench are happy with the points away to Luton. You know, this, I think they were top, we were second, something like that. So I was like, we take the point, we move on, 10 games to go, we're still in the hunt for the title type of thing. And John's saying, corner, corner, clicker, whips one into Billy, reverses a pass. And then I'm thinking, oh, there we go. But and it doesn't show you the celebrations on the highlights to the extent of what they were.
Some good images.
It was insane, mate. I remember jumping onto Billy and then falling into the Hordens and then just having fans on top of me, the subs on top of me. It was unbelievable. One of them days in football that you live for.
It's one of them where, so I haven't missed many of the big ones. Like, I missed that day because it was my birthday weekend, and my mates are Burnley fans, and they'd paid for me to go to West Ham away with Burnley months before. Do you know, before it was obvious that was going to be a big game. So I remember the week of, I was like, fuck, should I just get the train to Luton from London? Ended up not doing it because my mates had paid for everything. And then it was the day, do you remember when, so Burnley won away 3-0 at West Ham, and it was when the crowd were running on and throwing pennies and stuff like that. So I was buzzing. It was like really exciting. And then I came out of the ground and saw that, and I was just like, I'm going to regret that for the rest of my life, not being there.
Well, he was murdered at Luton, wasn't he? I remember my dad, because there was a bit of trouble, wasn't he? Luton fans,
yeah.
A bit of Rocky fans.
Yeah, my uncle.
My dad was there.
My uncle was ringing me after the game, and he said that so first of all, they were locked in, and then Stanley fans have sort of thought, fuck this, and they've sort of just said, just open the gates, and then as they've opened the gates, it was just mayhem. But like you said, one of them that you just live for.
Oh, as I say, they're the days you live for, mate. The dressing room after that, you would have thought we'd won the league.
Yeah.
And them games are sort of pivotal in actually winning the league, because they give you the belief to think we just beat the best team in the league in everyone's eyes.
Yeah.
So we can go with the last 10 games unbeaten.
Yeah. It was, and even after that game, it was sort of, I was just thinking, it just didn't drop, did it? The standard didn't drop. We were just...
No.
Because I was thinking we might win that game and then maybe struggle with the pace or whatever, but it was just fucking bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, it became relentless then, didn't it? Yeah, we just choking them off after that.
How good was that for you coming off the, like, 2 years prior? Because that was just obviously a massive, ended up, it was like it's the ultimate, like, tragic story that in football. It's you couldn't write a more beautiful end to a season, even though it ended terribly for us. That's 15-16 season was just, the ups and downs were just incredible, weren't they?
Yeah. You know, I look back on that season you know, people will look back on it with obviously the disappointment of the Stevenage game, but you know, in my eyes, we had actually individually and the way we play, we had a better side that year than when we won the league, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We played better football. You know, with Crooksy was, he's one of the best I've played with, mate. He was like a Rolls Royce in centre midfield. I've never seen nothing like it. You know, them long strides that he had just stepping forward with the ball. He's one of the best I've played. You'd have Windass, who was on absolute fire at the time. Couldn't stop scoring. You'd have Piero, who was just, you know, the postman, we called him, because he just out his feet to deliver. We had, as I say, we had a top team. We had players on the bench. We had Foss who come in, who's at Brentford. We had some side that year. But we played some football. The year we went up, won the league, I'd say we were a little bit more direct.
Yeah.
Than that year, you know, the year we won the league, we was into Billy, set to me or flick to Caden. That was our. We didn't really play out much through the back and through the thirds, and we was basically, let's get it to Billy. He'll battle, he'll hold it up, he'll set me, he'll set Clicker, or he'll spin it round the corner for Caden. If he doesn't and they win it, Scotty Brown and Seamus will pick up second balls. And then we were just solid four at the back in January. Yozza, Jimmy Dunn, and
Callum.
Who's the right back?
Callum.
Yeah. We were just solid, mate. We were just so, as I say, but the year we won the league, we and that's probably what it takes to win leagues. Bearing in mind the solidity and what we had that year, and as I say, we had that game plan. We weren't as expansive as the year we missed out in 2015-16, but we were a lot more solid. But that, as I say, that Stevenage game, mate, well, you couldn't write it. You know, you'd even think back now to, obviously, us not doing the job, but Bristol Rovers scoring so late in the game. They don't score. You still go up. It's scandalous.
96.
You forget, like, they scored, mate. They score so late.
Yeah, it makes me feel sick thinking about it. But like you say, I mean...
And then we were done. We were done in the playoffs then, you know. We were shot. Even though we actually nearly got past Wimbledon, psychologically, you know, to not beat a Stevenage side who, you know, we've had our battles with Stevenage down the years, and if it could have been any other side, you know, Stevenage weren't playing for nothing, but they knew it was against us, and I think Stevenage half raised the game because they didn't like Hachi.
No.
And I thought, they just want to come here and spoil the party. The fans will be fucking buzzing if they spoil the party because they don't get on with Hachi. So if we were playing like a Newport at the time or someone like that, I felt we would have turned them over, but Stephen, it's just the history we had with them in the playoffs, and Graham West, they just thought it could have been from any other team but them.
Yeah, I mean, and we were the only side in the league as well to score in every home game until that last day.
Yeah.
And then I was in the copy send that day because I went with my mates again, and they could only get tickets in that end. And like you said, we were next at Stevenage fans and they were fucking loving it, all 60 of them. And my head had gone on that final whistle. I was just like, especially when you think about we hit the bar and stuff like that, didn't we? But you were never gonna, we were never gonna pick ourselves up, were we, and go again?
No.
Going into the playoffs.
No, we were shot then, mate, as I say, mentally shot, because to come back from that disappointment of not getting over the line is physically it's not too demanding, but the mental aspect is massive.
It is, yeah. So, where are we now? So we've got a few just sort of general ones as well. I've got a few people that have tweeted me some questions to ask you. Best player you've ever played with at Stanley, you think?
What a question that is. Wow.
Yeah, that's a toughie.
It's a toughie, but it's not, because the best I played with was Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah. By, you know, technically wise, and as I say, you look at Crooksies and Windasses and all that, but for me, Billy was another level, you know. He was my roommate, and struggled with the bulimia and different things throughout, but put him on that pitch, mate, and he was just an animal.
Yeah.
You know, I'd seen his struggles firsthand. You know, we used to go to games and we'd have pre-match meals the night before, and the blame you. He could just eat, but then I'd see him like sneak off to the toilet, and I'd know that he was going to be sick, where other players wouldn't. And then I'd see him the next day just perform the way he did constantly. I used to get battered by centre-halves, and I mean, like, he's not the tallest, Billy, but he's quite wide set. And when he plants his feet, he's like a battering ram, mate. And he, honest to God, he just went through it. He went through a stage where he was unplayable. And me and him sort of complimented each other. He knew my game, I knew his game.
Yeah.
Sorry, mate.
Sorry.
He knew when I was getting the ball where it was going. I knew when it was coming into his feet where to run. And you think about you listen to the interviews like Gerrard and Torres and players like that. Once you have that sort of connection with a player, it's unbelievable. And I had that with Billy on and off the pitch. You know, off the pitch, he's an absolute smashing lad. To me, as I say, he was my roommate. He was one of my best mates throughout my time at Achi. And it still saddens me now to see that, you know, he's not playing, certainly at our level or League Two, because he could easily play. You know, we could wake up tomorrow and play in a game. And still score. He's that good. To say I play with technically better players than him. Miles better players than Troopsies, Windass's, Caden Jackson's. Players who've went on to play, play with, you think about players, Jimmy Dunn's, Kevin Long's, who play for Burnley in the Premier League. But for me, mate, Billy's unbelievable. You know, he's the best I've played with at Achi by a mile.
Yeah, and it's good to see him in a good place as well. He was commenting last night on the. He had a few questions and stuff, so it's good to see him.
He needs to cut his hair, though, mate.
I was going to ask you about that.
Long hair. It's terrible. He needs to cut his banner.
Well, to be fair, I think we're all struggling with that in lockdown, mate. So I won't.
Not half.
So in terms of then, what are your goals next couple of years with Stanley? Is it to kick on? I think you mentioned there before, somebody asked, do you see yourself finishing your career with Stanley? What are long and short term goals for you?
Next couple of years, like I said, I think we've got another promotion in us. I really do. You know, you look at Wickham last year, they're struggling in the Championship, but you take a year struggling in the Championship and come back down just for the experience of it.
Yeah.
For Accrington to be in League One is unbelievable. You know, you see some of our fixtures now. To even when I signed, but before when I signed, 10 years prior when you're playing Ratcliffe Boroughs and, Oxford Albions and teams like that, to play in Sunderland in a league game, Portsmouth in a league game, and competing with them and beating them is something that, as an Achi fan and as an Achi player, watching Achi obviously before I even signed, obviously through Jimmy, was something that I thought I'd never see anyway. And it's we're not settling for that. I think this year we've got a great chance. If not this year, we've still got players and next year who are contracted. So the next couple of years look bright. We've got good players. The key for us always is keeping hold of them players that are there, that do well. You think of your Dion's at the minute, Colby's. They're the diamonds that you've got to try and keep hold of. But gone are the days where you're selling them for 75 grand, 100 grand to pay the wages the next month. You're getting over £1 million for them players now. You look at what we sold Caden for and Johnny for. And that's all come through, with the chairman at the end of the day. Him coming in has stabilised everything about the club financially. Not only that, people look at chairmen as and I've had it at different clubs where you can't speak to them and they come on the bus and you're a bit wary of them. I could just go on the bus and sit next to the whole team, talk to them about anything and have a beer with them, have a laugh with them, play some music. And, he's just a down-to-earth fella, and that's what we all love about him. And long may that continue. But, he probably doesn't know himself firsthand at what he's done to the club, because he didn't see the pitfalls of when he weren't there. Myself, the gaffer, and Jimmy, and I have seen the state that the club was in to where it is now, and it's miles apart. And as I say, it's all down to them, mate.
Yeah, I think it goes unsaid sometimes that he doesn't realise how bad it was you know, like say 10 years ago. It's interesting that a point that the lad that I do the podcast with, just the ones that we do every week, when in John and Jimmy's first promotion in 99, was it 2000, they actually paraded the trophy on the pitch at Ewood Park at half time in the Premier League. And the game was Blackburn against Bolton. And it's funny to think that in 20 years, we're now a division higher than Bolton Wanderers when they were sort of patting us on the head that day. And next year, we could realistically be going to Ewood for a league fixture, which is, for someone like me who's grown up watching Stanley from, like I say, 20 years ago, I mean, that is just complete madness.
Scary, mate. Scary.
Scary stuff, yeah. So, like you said, would you like to stay on in the club in some sort of capacity after you play then?
Yeah, 100%. 31, aren't I? So, you know, I still feel like I've got good years ahead of me playing-wise. But then, you know, on the back of that, you know, the forefront of my mind would be to stay at the club in some capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's, it'd be, you know, through the youth team or onto the gaffer's staff. You know, I don't know, but, you know, if you ask me now, my mindset would be, you know, at some role, I'd love to stay at the club. You know, as I say, I've got that affiliation with the club now where I do feel like the club is ingrained in me. It's ingrained in my family, you know, and it will be forever. You know, it's as I say, I've spent over 10 years of my life here, so it becomes like a son or daughter to you. And you know, the way the fans have treated me certainly the last 5 or 6 years, I just want to give back. I want to give back now while I'm playing. Try and give moments, you know, on the pitch, scoring goals, but you know, when I stop playing, still give the club as much as I can.
I think that'd be the ultimate troll for the Aki Webbers if you became a coach and then a manager one day after you've spent opening a few dickheads on there have sort of wrote you off.
After I've got Fred going for a little bit longer, wouldn't
we? Yeah, absolutely. Last thing to touch on then, I'd say, is I want to talk about, we've had a lot of questions sort of about your best goals, your favourite goals. I've got a list in front of me here that you spoke to me about in the summer when we did the article. You said, I've wrote down 8, so I'll narrow them down. 5th was Leighton Orient at home, scored 2 and got 3 assists when we won 5-1. Do you remember which goal in particular you were talking about?
Probably the lob coming inside. I think I've seen the keeper off his line.
That's the one, yeah.
Times. Yeah, just lasered it over him and hit the bar. I think it's bounced off him, but I got given the goal.
Top that, night for yourself.
That was a great goal, but more so the nightmare, yeah.
Yeah.
Beat Leighton Orient 5-1, as I say, 3 assists and 2 goals in a 5-1 win. It was one of them nights where everything that was just came off.
Yeah, it was class that. And they were shit as well, weren't they? They went down that year.
Oh, they were terrible, yeah.
Dreadful. And then number 4, first season in League One, Bristol Rovers away, the winner in the last minute. I watched back the other day, actually, and that is a class, class finish as well, yeah.
It was a great goal, the flick from Billy in the build-up. He flicks one. A bit like Colby does now, it's come to him and he's flicked like a flick. If people watch the goal, flicked it to Jordan, I think. Jordan slid me in and I've just slid it past the keeper. But I think they were the first goals any Accrington player scored in League One, weren't they, at the time? So more of a sentimental thing as well, maybe that one. But because it was just a side foot goal, it weren't like the goal itself. It was more like, as I say, being last minute, being the first Aki goal scorer to score a goal in League One. And you know, to go to the ground like Bristol Rovers, which is reminds me of Goodison Park, but Bristol Rovers is like an old-fashioned.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Great ground. It's always a full house there, and the fans are always on you. To score a winner there and get us off to a good start in League One, as I say, it was a great memory.
I was in the away end that day, and I think we just hit the bar, hadn't we, moments before, and you thought that that was the chance gone. And I remember we were sat and their fans were sort of giving us some, and then, like you said, to curl that in, especially against them as well, when they'd given us that heartache a couple of years earlier. It felt nice to do that against them.
I don't think I mentioned the Grimsby goal in them list, did I?
Well, no.
About this today.
Yeah, the list was so Leighton Orient, Bristol Rovers, and then the next one is your Hereford one, which is
Hereford one still on YouTube. That yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
that was when the Lions were in the pitch, I think.
Yeah, it is. I watched it last night. And then number two was Blackpool away Boxing Day last minute, and then number one was the goal that you mentioned before, scoring at Luton.
Yeah, well, the Grimsby one is up there for a couple of reasons that we were on a terrible run before Grimsby. This is the year we won the league.
I
remember training the day before Grimsby. My son was born around the same time of the game, and I remember Jimmy saying, we just need to go back to basics here. We'd lost a few, I think. We were on a terrible run. And we just thought, you know what, we're just going to work hard this game and try and get a draw, get a win and something to build from.
Yeah.
Not play expansive football. So I remember the day before the game, just like we were just basically playing off seconds, going a bit longer, not playing more. And I died for the penalty to go 1-0 up. Went in the box and I sort of seen someone behind me. I've clipped my own heels, but he's behind me and News behind me. And Darren Drysdale. Have you seen the video from last night where he butts the play?
Yeah, was it him? Yeah.
Yeah, that's him. So he was the referee.
What was that about? Is he just a nutter then?
He's a nutter then, mate, yeah. So we had us the other week against Tynigan. So he was the ref that day. He's given the pen. Billy scored the pen. And I've scored a bullet header. I've never scored a bullet header in my career.
Yeah.
And against Grimsby, I scored one. Billy crossed it, banging off the bar. And then we went on to win the game 3-0. I think Caden scores. And then from that game, it catapulted us to give us that momentum to start.
That was the start.
It was. Yeah.
Because there's
so many.
We had a terrible record up there as well, because I went the year before. They beat us 2-0 on Boxing Day, didn't they? And we were...
Yeah.
We were easily beaten that day. So, like you said, though, I don't think any of us expected to go there and... Well, with the bad run that we were on, we weren't expecting much. But then, like you said, that was the start, wasn't it? That was the catalyst for it.
There's a funny story about that 2-0 game. So it was around Christmas again, wasn't it? And so the London lads, who like Omar's and Janoy's, they all lived in the same house in Kirby. And so New Year's Eve, we had Grimsby Boxing Day. The gaffer said, I don't want no one going home for Christmas. You know, we're in. Do it right, we'll get a good result, I think. A couple of the London lads have gone home for Christmas. And then we play Boxing Day, and first goal comes past Omar Beckles, and he slips. Lad goes through and scores a goal. By this point, Jimmy and the gaffer have got wind that the London lads have gone home for Christmas. And we're at half time now, and Jimmy's fucking, how can no one slips? No one should slip in football. You know why you've slipped? Because you went home for Christmas. I'm sitting there thinking, hey, Steven Gerrard slipped because Liverpool the league. But Jimmy said, you'd only slip because you went home for Christmas. I was, but you can't laugh because he's obviously raging at that time. I'm getting beat. I'm thinking, it's one of them after the game where he just laughing about it, mate. Some of the shouts.
One of them where if you watched it back, everyone would just piss themselves, wouldn't they? But in the moment, everyone's sat there like.
You went on for Christmas, clapping.
The Blackpool goal again. Then you spoke about. I mean, that was certainly one of the best celebrations that I can remember recently. Again, I watched that. I'm going to put the clip of it actually before this podcast in the introduction. There's a fantastic fan video from behind the goal. A Blackpool fan. And as you've took your shirt off, all you can hear is just the perfect fucking wanker, fucker. It's absolutely class. But yeah, what a celebration that was.
That was some game. That was the actual game itself. I think I might have just been coming back from a shoulder injury. So I was on the bench, come on, for half an hour. And it was one of them. It's a bit of a derby, isn't it? It's always a good one for the fans. Blackpool, we always take loads there, don't we? I remember Mark Hughes scoring like there.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether you were at that game.
Yeah, we scored. And then we should have scored again, shouldn't we? Straight after.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did. There was an Easter Monday one as well, wasn't there, when we took 1,000 and
yeah,
the year before.
Yeah, always a good crowd. Similar to Fleetwood when we played them. We always take good numbers to Fleetwood. And I was just thinking, I'd just love to score here. I was wishing it was the other end because the fans were that end. Then I wouldn't have to run that far after the score to jump into the fans. But I remember just rolling the ball out to Callum Johnson. I thought, I'm going to get myself in the box here. He swung one in right on me, bang, into the corner. I just thought, oh, here we go. Top half line, the Blackpool fans. I've had a few bottles through at me and then just jump into the half fans.
It was class as well.
They're the days that you're here. There's the days that, as fans, you remember me because you'd already probably scalloped going into the grounds from having a few beforehand, and then you're going back into Blackpool with 3 points in the bag after.
It was dangerous. It was dangerous coming out. We had to walk back to that Manchester pub on the front, and we were getting like a police escort, and we were just getting absolute pelters everywhere. But like you say, it was class, yeah. So that Luton goal, you'd say then your top number one, you reckon, just because of what it meant, or? Like
yeah,
said,
just probably because what it meant. I've scored better goals, you know, the Lincoln one and the Czech, I'd say, you know, the away at Lincoln when I've scored a volley, that was a good goal. I've scored better goals than the Luton one, but just for what it meant, just for the build-up, as I say, Nathan Jones thinking to myself, as I say, in the air before the game, this little run, I'm going to give him some here because he can't talk about my teammates and us as title contenders, like, with nothing. And I thought, I just want to score just to rub his nose in it. And to score like that, and then for Billy to score the winner, especially with the scenes at the end, mate, you know, that'll live with me to the day I die, that game, definitely.
I think, have you spoken to Jordan about working with him now? What has he said about him? Does he say he's all right?
No, I text him. Well done. He messaged me now and then after game saying, well done, lads. But I haven't really got into the how Nathan Jones is. You know what? He's a good coach. Probably is a good coach. But Jim Gannon was a good coach, and Jim Gannon's an absolute cock. The biggest of them all, mate. You know, I didn't touch on what happened at Stockport. And how I got treated, you know, people, Stockport fans have a perception of me as like a troublemaker, but it weren't the case. You know, it was one of them where Diddy, a man, brought me in. I started really well, got injured, done my collarbone. And when I come back, Diddy had been sacked. And this fan favourite, Jim Gannon, had come in. You know, he'd done well previously.
You've seen that now as well, dude. I have a few mates that are Stockport fans from Manchester, and with him being sacked a few weeks ago, they've got this perception of him as he's like their Coleman, really, isn't he? But
he is, yeah.
I said to them, all the stories that I've heard about him, even listening to other podcasts, like have you ever listened to that Under the Kosh podcast with John Parkin? Yeah. Everyone who mentions him just says dickhead straight away.
Yeah. And you know what, mate? Like, tactically in that, he had a little bit, like, he was good. And he'd have your clues up, and he knew the game. But his one-on-one management and how to treat players and how to talk to you, it was horrendous, especially senior players. And he fell out a lot with them. But not fell out with them. He was a bit of a coward, and you'd have an argument with him. And he'd just go, he'd be one of them where he'd go and tell the chairman, and you'd be getting disciplined the next day with a letter. He was ruthless, mate. His first day, or his second day, he basically had me sat down saying, you'll never play for the club again. You're going to train with the kids for the next 3 months. And I hadn't done nothing wrong. He just said, you're not a big unit. It's come from above me. The club can't afford this, can't afford that. You're not even going to get changed with the first team. You're going to be getting changed with them. And then from then on, he was just trying every trick in the book to get me off the wage bill, trying to sack me for this, trying to sack me for that. And he was just, it got to the point, mate, where as I say, I don't hate many people, but I actually hate him. He's not a nice man. Yeah. And even watching him get sat, leave Stockport the other day, And they're doing well, Stockport, so that tells you something. You know, they're doing well, but they're still getting rid of him. And it's for that reason, mate, his personnel skills and his man management skills are shocking. But we don't want to finish on him. We want to finish on a good note.
Yeah, I guess we can finish on what your expectations for tonight then. We've got to go there and try and win, haven't we, I guess?
Yeah. As I say, we played well the other night. We should have beat Lincoln. And they've been the ball mark, haven't they? You know, they're top of the league. And you know, we were the better team, mate. And we've got, for me, I thought Paul Smart was great the other night.
I thought he was good as well. I was just going to say, his pace on the ball is outstanding at times. I thought that there was one moment when Morgan came on, he could have slipped him in. And I thought, what a great start. That would have been his first touch in Football League.
With Paul, he had this effect last time he came. First five or six games, we had to think about Sunderland, Derby. He come in and he lit the place on fire.
Yeah.
And then he had that little bit of a dip. Hopefully with him being a little bit more experienced now and a little bit more savvy, he can keep to the pace and keep that the way he's been playing, because as I say, he's been looking sharp. And you've got the back four, who just looks solid as anything. And like a touchdown, mate, the keeper's the best I've seen at our place, you know. And they play with some good cats in Marek and Conor Ripley, and there's a few decent keepers that I played with, Cizak when he was there. But he's this Nathan Baxter's the best of the lot, mate, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, Toby did well, but we were talking the other week. I can't see him. He looks so, everything he does is just so controlled, isn't it? He's so confident on the ball. He's shot stopping, punching, like everything. He's got everything.
Yeah, and you speak to your dad, mate. He's the first in training, the last away every day.
Yeah,
you think he lives in the gym?
Yeah.
Every time I go into that gym, I think he's got a sleeping bag in there. He's always in there. You know, and then usually with goalkeepers throughout my career, if you say to them, I want to do a little bit of finishing after the training's done, they look at you like you've got three heads and they think, I just want to get in my car and go home.
Yeah.
Nathan actually comes up to you, says, Shawnee, do you want to do a little bit of finishing? I'm like, fucking hell, how refreshing is that? Come on, let's go and do a little bit.
Yeah.
And we just ping balls at him for 20 minutes after training. He's a great lad. But we've got a great, as I say, last year we didn't have that. We had too many little fractions of players that didn't really get on. And it culminated in a struggling. And as I say, I think the gaffer recognised that in the summer. And every player he's brought in has been a good egg, has bought into what we've done. It's going to be a tough game tonight. And it'll be a tough last 20-odd game. It's strange to think we're only halfway through the season, in mid-February.
Yeah, it's mental. It's
strange, but we maybe just, as I say, keep suspension free. Hopefully I'll be back next Tuesday myself. Hopefully you can help out in any way I can. And then we kick on, mate, and we try and, you know, we've made no escape from the fact that we'd like to get in them playoffs. If we do, it'd be an unbelievable achievement. If we don't, we're still Accrington and we're still budging over our weight.
Absolutely, yeah. There's nothing more you can say than that, mate. Just, I think fans would just be so refreshed to hear that as well. I think we've done nearly 2 hours there. I won't keep any more of your time. Thank you very, very much for being our first guest on.
No worries, mate. I enjoyed it.
On Raw Milk. And yeah, nice one, mate.
A little bit, but yeah.
I know, that's what we want. I think it'll be two separate ones now as well. So,
perfect.
All the best for tonight and all the best for the rest of the season, mate. Thank you very much.
You too, mate. See you later.
Sound. See you later, Ron.
Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you once again to Mr. Sean McConville for giving up his time, and I wish him all the best for this season and in the future. I'd love to see him coaching at Stanley one day and even take the big job himself. He is well and truly a Stanley legend. Thank you for tuning into Raw Milk. Our theme music is Mr. Powder by Deja Vega. Our producer is Scott Borton. Follow us at Raw Milk Zine on Twitter and Instagram, and Raw Milk Fanzine on Facebook.
You can also download, subscribe and like all of our podcasts at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Up the Reds!
Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.